We all want to know, how much should we pay our people? Service Leadership puts out a great report, and Peter Kujawa joins me to talk about the research they find. We talked about how compensation works, where the increases are happening, remote work, unlimited PTO, and his favorite data point on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Looking to reach an audience of thousands of MSPs and IT service providers? Put your ad right here on The Business of Tech and be on the show that 64% of MSPs report having listened to. A recurring top 50 tech news podcast, there are affordable options for you to reach our audience, and we can support any budget. Podcast listeners are more engaged, have a higher level of brand retention, and are more willing to listen to ads here than any other avenues. Want to know more? There's information at mspradio.com/engage, including a button to book a time to talk. Look forward to that discussion. Peter, well, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Dave. Glad to be back.
You are my most frequent flyer on the show, so I really appreciate you always coming with really cool insights. We're going to talk today about the compensation report. You guys have, for those that aren't familiar, what's give an overview of what the report is.
Yeah, we launched it last week. We're really excited about it. The quality, it turned out great. Just couldn't be happier with how it turned out. So the background on it is Service Leadership used to do a compensation benchmarking report every other year. And the last year it was done prior to a year ago. The last year was 2016. We had tons of requests in 2022 to bring back the data because of wage inflation, all the pressures that were on every MSP out there. And so last year we brought back the report and had an all-time record amount of companies enter their data. And this year we were up 50% over last year. So the report last year was so well received that we made the decision to bring it back as manual product. And so we opened up the data submission window again in October and November of 2023. Anybody who provided their data to us worldwide got a free copy of the report last week, and anybody else can purchase it. So that's the backstory on it.
Awesome. Now, I've got some questions. So I want to hit a couple of the highlights with you. And I noticed, so for 2023, you noted that the top performing technology solution providers provided lower compensation increases compared to the bottom quartile. And then you said indicating a difference in compensation strategies. I feel like difference in compensation strategies is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. But give me a little bit of insight into what you mean by the differences in the strategies.
Yeah, it's a great question. So this generated a lot of buzz last year, and it generated a lot of we'll say constructive feedback from employees whose takeaway was that you're teaching my MSP to pay me less. And first of all, that's not the case. So there's a couple of ways that best in class pay their people on average less. And by the way, we saw the data again this year. So number one is typically best-in-class providers are much better at using data to make business decisions. So, and we saw the evidence again this year that once again, the bottom quartile paid the biggest increases last year, and we're planning on paying the biggest increases this year. And the same thing holds true, the opposite holds true for the best-in-class. The best-in-class held the line the most on their increases last year, and they were planning on doing it again this year. So definitely data plays part of the decision at it. If you're not sure what to pay your people, and maybe you're responding to a number that you heard from one of your employees who heard it from a recruiter or some other source that's not necessarily reliable data, you're not necessarily going to make the best decisions on compensation. So that's certainly one factor. The second factor is that the best in class are in a much better position to bring in less experienced employees, particularly into staff positions, get them trained, productive, and up and running faster. And as a result, they have a higher percentage of level one techs and level one engineers, et cetera. So when you look at the best in class paying less, it doesn't mean that every single person who works at a best-in-class shop is making less money. What it means is, on average, across a category, they're paying less. So let's take an example. Hypothetically, let's say you have a best-in-class shop and they're paying exactly the same amount for a level 1, 2, and 3 techs as the bottom quartile shop, just for sake of discussion. But the best-in-class shop employs half of their techs are level 1s, 30% of their techs are level 2s, and 20% are level 3s. The bottom quartile shop has maybe 20% level 1s, 50% level 2s, and 30% level 3s. Well, if you're paying the same amount and you add all of those people up, put them into a bucket and divide it by your FTEs, on average, you're paying more at the bottom quartile and less at the best in class. So there's a lot of things that feed into it, but there is definitely a distinct difference between how the best in class and the bottom quartile pay their people once again. Another big difference is in incentive pay. The best in class are tying about 2x as much of total compensation to incentive or performance pay for staff positions, and about 3x as much for manager positions as the bottom quartile. So there's radical differences in what we see in the data.
Now, you brought up incentives, and I want to bring this to think about, because one of the things that I've been covering a lot on the show these days is the idea that remote work is a big incentive for a lot of employees, a lot of people that are looking for that. But you reported in the data that only 8.7% of employees working in these technology service firms are working 100% remotely, while 42.8%, coming up on 50%, work exclusively in the office. Now, 73% of them get to spend at least 3 days or more working in the office. What's going on with remote work? We would have expected that number to be like the technology space to have embraced remote work a lot more. What's going on there?
Yeah, you and me both. We were shocked at this data. So for years, as has been the case, you've had the discussions, you've heard things anecdotally. We're in peer groups, and we're in front of hundreds of MSPs every quarter in person. And so we hear the roundtable discussion and different questions that are coming up. And the remote work model continued to be a hot topic even last year. So we didn't have any data. We would get asked about it a lot, but we're data folks. And so we like to have data on these subjects. So we decided to ask about it. And so the option for each position in the survey was 100% remote from home, 100% from the office, 3 days a week or more hybrid, 2 days a week hybrid or less. And so had you asked me this when we asked the question, my guess would have been, 30, 40% would have been 100% work from home. I would have thought work from the office would have been the smallest of the four options, and hybrid would have been the dominant. And you're right. I mean, in the U.S. has the highest. In the U.S., it was under 10% or 100% work from home. So definitely the industry has worked its way back into the office. Now, if you add the two hybrid models up, those are actually larger than the 100% work from the office, but not by much. So the key takeaway was, employees are back in the office. They might be back in the office 1 or 2 days a week. They might be there 3, 4 days a week or 5 days a week, but they're back in the office to some degree. And I think that makes sense. I think we saw some of the productivity gains in the first year of COVID and as employees shifted to work from home. But the longer that went on, the more difficult of a model that was to sustain. And we started to see some of the issues with that model over time. So it makes sense that employees are back in the office to some degree, but I was equally surprised at the number as you were. It was really shocking.
It's interesting because some of the broad industry data is saying that there is not a link to return to office mandates and profitability. Will you be able to look at this? You guys do the profitability study. Will you be able to do some cross-referencing on that going forward?
We actually did. So in the report, Interestingly, just under 15% of the best in class is 100% remote. And that's about three times as much as the bottom quartile. So what the data said is that though the best in class have the highest percentage of employees working 100% remote. So at first you think, okay, well, that seems counterintuitive based on all of the assumptions, but a couple things to keep in mind. First of all, it's still the smallest of the four models. So even for the best in class, it was less than 15%. So it's certainly not the dominant model. In other words, 85% of the best in class employees are back in the office as well. The other thing with the best in class is that they have more senior managers and less turnover typically on their managers. They have much better processes. They have tighter tech stacks, tighter target customer profiles. As a result of all of that, their managers are better able to manage employees remotely and productively, and they're able to onboard employees easier. And those managers are because they're more seasoned, they're in a better position to work remotely fully as well. The last thing is the best in class, when they went remote, they didn't just allow their employees to do it or not do it. Typically, we saw them pull the most cost out of their operation by closing down office locations. So it wasn't just that we're going to have employees have this model that they can pick from as a perk. We're actually going to pull significant cost out of our operation. So we think those are the things that have added up with the best in class to show that. But again, I wouldn't get too hung up on that number. It's still a much, much smaller number than those who are back in the office, even with the best in class.
Yeah, it leans into the process and management capabilities much more than it is necessarily that's the factor. But it's good to hear from my perspective that it aligns with the broader data as well. Now, the other one that got my attention was unlimited PTO. Because yes. You found that best-in-class MSPs and VARs are the least likely to offer unlimited PTO. And I'm intrigued by this because at some level, unlimited PTO is actually a bit of a head fake. When we actually dig into it, we find employees that are offered unlimited PTO actually end up taking less PTO, and it removes some level of cost from the organization. Tell me what you're seeing with this data point around unlimited PTO and its relationship to profitability and best in class.
Yeah, it's exactly as you described. First of all, the number of companies, the number of positions that were offering it was a little less than we were expecting based on discussion we were hearing. Second is it's much more for manager positions, and it's heavily distorted amongst MSPs by owner positions. So if I'm an owner, technically, of course, I have unlimited PTO. It's one of the reasons I own the business. I can take off whenever I want. I can travel whenever I want. Of course, as every owner watching this knows, I also rarely do. And I'm rarely able to as an owner. So technically, the set of managers receiving unlimited PTO is much, much higher than staff positions receiving it, which was not surprising. But it's the amount of dominance of owners was really skewed that data somewhat. So yes, as you described, unlimited PTO is primarily an advantage to the employer because I don't have to accrue to payout upon separation unused PTO. The dominant models are still, we collected also 11 to 20 days of PTO or 21 days plus of PTO. And so there's a lot of data in the report about that. It's different, obviously, for managers and staff. It's different based on longevity. But definitely the two big models continue to be giving PTO and the 11 to 20 day is the dominant model. We do see a lot of 21 day, but not unlimited as well.
Interesting.
So basically, if you want your employees, if philosophically as an employer, you're trying to minimize your liability, then go to unlimited PTO. If philosophically you believe in the importance of taking PTO and you believe that your employees should use that amount of time off per year for various other reasons, then we'd recommend still giving them that PTO.
Oh, that's good. That's good advice. Now, we're both big data geeks, right? So we love getting these back out. What was the data point that you found sort of most interesting and notable that you want to focus on?
Well, so first of all, those are anybody who hasn't seen the survey should understand it's about 425 pages or so. And about 300 pages of that is tables on the positions themselves. So we're showing positions by region. We're showing them in the U.S. We have the top 15 metros. We're showing them by experience level. So we really were positioning the data on the same roughly 60 positions that are common for every TSP. We're showing that data in a lot of different ways. So you don't have to read through all 425 pages or so of it. So that's the first thing, is making sure the audience understands that if I'm trying to understand what I should pay a level one tech or a CISO or a VCIO or other positions, there's a ton of information I can flip to and get a good idea readily in there. That being said, the other 100-125 pages is analysis, where we're looking at some of these trends and where we're showing the correlation with profitability and really getting into some of this other information that you and I are talking about. I would say for me that the most interesting data point in there is the softening of wage inflation. That what our data clearly shows is that 2022 was the high watermark for wage inflation. It improved last year, and it actually improved slightly better than was predicted heading into the year by the survey participants in the previous year. And so it was not, so 2023 was not only better than the year than 2022, but it was better than predicted it would be. And 2024 is predicted to be way better for wage inflation than 2023 was. And that's really, really good news for the profitability opportunity for every MSP out there, that as you know, 80-85% of the expenses of an MSP is people. It's going to be your labor cost. And so the last few years have been really tough. Price increases have been higher, which is good. MSPs have done a good job of passing those increases along. But wage inflation hits you much faster and harder than the benefit of price increases, right? If I have a price increase built into a multi-year contract, well, when that contract comes up for its anniversary date, I'm going to be able to get the benefit of the price increase. But if somebody comes in today and said, I've got an offer and it's for 15% more or whatever it is, or I've got a new hire and I can't get them at the number because of wage inflation, well, I start immediately getting hit with that expense starting in the next payroll period. So wage inflation is much more damaging than price increases make up for. And so seeing wage inflation soften to the degree that we have now on a 3-year, multi-year trend has been great.
Yeah. Peter, this stuff is always super fascinating. If people are interested in getting access to the data, where should they go?
The compensation report is available in two formats. You can get an executive summary for free, or you can, and we'll provide you with that slide, Dave, so you can show that. You can purchase the full report, and that's available today. So you can reach out to your ConnectWise rep or go to service-leadership.com to the service leadership website. And we have links there that will take you to both.
Peter, this has been fascinating. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Always a pleasure to come on and talk to you.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines, posted at businessof.tech. If you like the content, please make sure to hit that like button and follow or subscribe. It's free and easy and the best way to support the show and help us grow. You can also check out our Patreon, where you can join the Business of Tech community at patreon.com/MSPradio, or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on the show, visit mspradio.com/engage. Once again, Thanks for listening to me, and I will talk to you again on our next episode of The Business of Tech.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.